welcome back to the Archaeology News. Yes, I hope you've missed me. I am really sorry about the little gap there, but believe it or not, I've been having great fun out in the field. Yes, I do sometimes get out in the field, as you know. I've been doing some fabulous archaeology with communities. In fact, so far in the past 2-3 weeks, we've had about 400 people who've been getting involved in archaeological excavations around Scotland. And of course, I have to say that if you are in Scotland just now, we're in the middle of Archaeology Month. So if you're in Scotland, get yourself out to some of these fabulous sites where you can have a walk, perhaps even get involved in a dig. It's great fun. So without further ado, I think you've come here for the news, not to hear me and my fun. So let's start. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and of course, to view details in each story, including that source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Let's start with the best preserved paintings so far found at Çatalhöyük in Turkey. And then fancy a drink? I certainly do. It's the oldest pub in Scotland. Could it be 4,600 years old, found up in Shetland? We've got prehistoric bones returned to Canadian First Nations and a 5,000-year-old arrowhead unearthed in Scotland. There's a dig to find the connection between an ancient pillar and an even older prehistoric cairn in Wales. And then we fly across to China, where there's news of a discovery of horses and chariots. Now, it wouldn't be the archaeology news without a story about Stonehenge. It is all about, of course, the place where the Stonehenge stones came from in Preteli in Wales. We've got a tomb discovered there. Then we move down to Cornwall in southwest England, where a Bronze Age excavation is starting. And then a massive Iron Age fort excavation is also getting underway in Somerset. Prehistoric interbreeding may have improved our immune system, a new piece of research shows. And is the world's oldest profession, no, wait for it, actually a chef? We report on an upgrade of Maltese megalithic sites, and then on the evidence of early horse domestication in Arabia, controversial on that. And we end with archaeologists moving in at an ancient Scottish Highland site. Remember, of course, you can be listening to all of this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up to the minute with the news as it happens. So let's start off with today's podcast. A team of archaeologists excavating the 9,000-year-old Neolithic village Çatalhöyük in Turkey have found a painting on a wall with deep reds and reddish oranges, thought to be made from red ochre and cinnabar. British archaeologist Ian Hodder called the discovery very exciting and particularly intriguing. Dr. Hodder said that the pattern initially didn't look like much, but it gradually emerged that it was a complete painting and the best preserved painting that he'd ever seen at Çatalhöyük, with wonderful, fresh, bright colours and very neat lines. It's by far the most intricate and elaborate painting that they've found during the excavations since the mid-90s. But Stone Age paintings don't come with labels explaining what they are. The paintings there at Çatalhöyük are very enigmatic and full of ambiguity, very difficult to read. But the two main contenders for what this new discovery might show are simply a geometric design, meaning is not clear, but an alternative one. It is not just a geometric design, but represents bricks and some sort of structure, maybe even a blueprint. Houses were a very important symbol socially and a focus of life at Chateau, and perhaps the artist was trying to draw the relationship between them and the house, but at the moment it's not easy to make sense of it. Another find this summer was a row of 11 handprints inside a house above a burial platform. Still another was the discovery of a young calf's head that had been painted red and then installed in the house, again above another platform that covered 9 burials. A pattern that the team has noticed is that paintings seem to be concentrated around burial platforms. Shahina Farad, the project's field director from University College London, commented that they are trying to understand why they chose this spot to live. They're looking at what we call art. Why were they so interested in bulls? Why were they also using certain geometric designs? What indeed were the daily activities and what were the ritual activities? So many questions. An international team of people from 22 countries worked on the site this year, led by experts based at Stanford University in California and University College London in Britain. The area was first excavated in the 1960s by James Mellert, who now 85, who established that it had been the home to an advanced culture of people transitioning from a nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle to a more settled farming life. And with only 4% of Chatuhuyuk excavated, there is still so much work to be done. Experts believe that 4,600 years ago, natives may have been enjoying a pie and a pint at Jarlshof in Shetland, up in the north of Scotland. They say the layout of the stone settlement near Sumburgh Head suggests it may be the oldest pub ever found in Britain, and a dozen or so quern stones for grinding barley indicate that it may have served as both a drinking den and a bakery. Jarlshof, described as one of the most remarkable archaeological sites ever excavated in the British Isles, was first revealed after a storm in 1890. It contains remains dating from 2,500 BCE all the way up to the 17th century. Experts, including Shetland regional archaeologist Val Turner, are in no doubt that, pub or not, there was beer being brewed at Jarlshof in the Iron Age. Dr. Noel Foyot, author of Prehistoric and Viking Shetland, said, "We know that communal feasting and probably drinking was a feature of Iron Age life, and that providing lavish hospitality seems to have been an important means of establishing social status. It's difficult, however, to distinguish an inn or a pub where people paid for a, of course, from a communal, you always pay at a pub, oof, from a communal drinking house. It's an attractive idea that there may have been a welcoming houf, now that's a fabulous Scottish word meaning a sort of nice warm, cosy place, at Shetland's southern landfall, and perfectly possible. But it's much more likely any hospitality would have been offered by a local family rather than by a commercial landlord, as we'd imagine one today. The building has a house next door which has a large souterrain, which was the equivalent of an Iron Age refrigerator used for storing smoked and salted meats. And during the early Iron Age, the site at Jarlshof was surrounded by crops of barley and emmer, a kind of wheat. The ancient remains of 142 members of a First Nation have been repatriated in a grave in British Columbia, decades after being dug up by archaeologists. Members of the Heiltsuk First Nation and retired Simon Fraser University archaeologist Roy Carlson supervised the reburial on the small island of Namu, off the northern end of Vancouver Island. Carlson was part of an excavation team that dug up the bones in 1977, some of the remains dating back 4,500 years. Carlson said that analysis of the ancestral remains may yield important information for the Heiltsuk. In fact, they're very proud of the fact that archaeology indicates their ancestors have been there for a very, very long time. 4,500 years, at least. Now, even older than that, we've got a 5,000-year-old arrowhead in Scotland, with archaeologists on the site at Kilwinning Medieval Abbey in Scotland believing that this flint leaf arrowhead dates to the early Neolithic, which is around 3,500 BCE. Tom Rees of Rathmel Archaeology said that while this may be a stray loss by a prehistoric hunter, Neolithic flint arrowheads during the medieval period were given the name elf shot and used as amulets to protect the wearer, giving a more intriguing process for bringing the arrowhead to the site. Already a range of medieval and post-medieval finds have been recovered, including slate carved into gaming boards. Archaeologists are launching a new dig to try and unearth the secrets of a 9th century stone monument on a prehistoric mound in Wales. Bangor and Chester University experts will be beginning excavations, in fact they've already begun, at the Pillar of Eliseg near Llangollen in Denbighshire. It is part of work by Historical Monuments Agency CADU to conserve the mound and better explain it to people. Last year, excavations focused on the mound, which was identified as an early Bronze Age cairn. It followed on from one in the 18th century. There will be an open afternoon at the archaeological site on the 16th of September. The team are looking at the relationship between the pillar and the early Bronze Age cairn on which it stands. Last year, they carried out an exploratory excavation just to uncover areas and see what might remain underneath the ground. This year, they're going back to the cairn to one particular trench because they discovered evidence of a dig on top of the cairn from 1773. This was at the point where the pillar had fallen down, and the local landowner, Trevor Lloyd, decided he wanted to re-erect it. He did the dig and claimed afterwards to have found a stone kist with a body in it and pieces of silver and other, wait for it, things. Though, of course, the new researchers believe that this might just be local legend. The pillar of Ellisig was originally a tall stone cross, but only part of a round shaft survives within its original base. It once bore a long Latin inscription saying that the cross was raised by Consen, ruler of the kingdom of Powys, who died 854 CE, in memory of his great-grandfather Ellisig, who drove the Anglo-Saxon invaders out of the area. Now to China, where the perfectly preserved remains of 5 chariots and 12 horses, believed to be at least 3,000 years old, have been found in the Chinese city of Luoyang. The remains have been undisturbed since the early Western Zhou dynasty, which dates to around 1046 to 771 BCE. Archaeologists believe the 12 horses, lying side by side, show the animals were slaughtered before burial rather than buried alive. As well as the horses and 5 chariots, bronze and ceramics have also been found. Archaeologists are convinced that the perfectly preserved tomb belongs to an official or scholar of some standing, given the quality of the finds. The tomb, a vertical earthen pit, has excited historians since it was discovered during the construction of a hospital. It gives an unprecedented insight into funeral customs in the early Western Zhou dynasty. Now, if you want to see more on that, including the actual photographs, then you just pop along to pasthorizons.com. It's one of our leading stories. So pasthorizons.com, and there you'll be able to see the photographs. Now, this is exciting. Of course, it's a Stonehenge story that doesn't involve Stonehenge. The tomb for the original builders of Stonehenge could have been unearthed by an excavation site again in Wales. The Cairn Menyn site in the Pretheli Hills is where the bluestones used to construct the first stone phase of the henge were quarried around 2300 BCE. The remains of a ceremonial monument were found with a bank that appears to have had a pair of standing stones embedded within it. The bluestones at the earliest phase of Stonehenge, also set in pairs, give a direct architectural link from the iconic site to this newly discovered henge-like monument in Wales. The tomb, which is a passage cairn, a style typical of Neolithic burial monument, was placed over this henge. The central site had already been disturbed, so archaeologists chose to excavate around the edges. Organic material from the site will be radiocarbon dated, but it's thought that any human remains will have long since vanished. Two of the leading experts on Stonehenge, Professor Jeff Wainwright and Professor Timothy Darville, have been leading the project at Cairn Menyn. The area has many springs which may have been associated with ritual healing in prehistoric times, and their existence may be the reason why these particular stones were quarried for another monument so far away. Professor Wainwright said, "The important thing is that we have a ceremonial monument here that's earlier than the passage grave. This may point to a very important person who may have been responsible for the impetus for these stones to be transported. It can be compared directly with the first Stonehenge, so for the first time there's a direct link between Cairn Menyn, where the bluestones came from, and Stonehenge in the form of a ceremonial monument." I like there was lots of maybes and coulds. Good archaeology that. Now, a 10-day excavation project at a Bronze Age site near Llanion in Cornwall in England has begun. Previous excavations have revealed Middle Bronze Age and Iron Age artefacts, so said archaeologist Dr. Andy Jones. There's at least 12 roundhouses at the site, which are believed to be approximately 3,500 years old. Since the last excavations in the 1980s, the site has been covered by dense vegetation. The excavation of the site will provide further information about the occupation of the settlement, as well as looking at the impact of bracken on sensitive archaeological remains. Funny they should say that, because in fact we've just finished last month, it was, excavations up in Scotland of another site which has a serious bracken problem. And let me tell you, it does damage subsurface archaeology something rotten. The Ham Hill Iron Age Hillfort site in Somerset spreads over 80 hectares, making it the largest in Britain and dwarfing better-known sites from the same period, such as Maiden Castle in Dorset or Danebury in Hampshire. A major excavation is underway to explore its history, and researchers are now hoping to gain a deeper insight into its life some 2,000 years ago. Work is due to continue until September 2013, by which time the joint team from the Universities of Cambridge and Cardiff hope to have a clearer plan of its interior. Niall Sharples from Cardiff University said it's a bit of an enigma. Ham Hill is so big that no archaeologists have ever really been able to get a handle on it. People think of these places as defensive structures, but it is inconceivable that such a place could have been defended. Thousands of people would have been required militarily. Clearly it was a special place for the people of the Iron Age, but when did it become special? And why? And how long did it stay that way? Researchers believe the site may have been a monument and was somehow meant to create a sense of community or collective identity or even prestige. Currently, we don't know if the site's development was prompted by trade, defence or communal identity needs. Equally, should we be thinking of it as a great centralised settlement, almost like a proto-urban society? Well, one of the key aims of the current excavation will be to pin down the rough date of the fort's construction. Although there's been Bronze Age finds from an earlier era, it's still not known when the hill was occupied and the ramparts built. The current excavation has already thrown up a number of finds. The initial dig uncovered human remains, one full skeleton and the partial remains of perhaps two others, as well as a skeleton of a dog. All are still being studied and dated. The team also found more signs of domestic life, the remains of a house, pottery, iron sickles, quern stones, billhooks and other objects dating back to before the Roman invasion. The Durotriges tribe, which lived on the hill, was subdued in 45 CE by soldiers from the 2nd Legion Augusta under the command of the future Emperor Vespasian. But what the Romans found there, a street system lined with houses on their own plots of land, is what archaeologists hope to uncover more fully in excavations over the next 3 summers. At the moment, archaeologists are focusing on a rectangular enclosure which was surrounded by a ditch measuring some 100 metres by 60 metres. Several such paddocks appear to have existed, as well as at least one main thoroughfare and a scattering of roundhouses and grain storage pits. It's still unclear what the rectangular spaces were meant for. Enclosures are not normally found within hill forts of the Iron Age, and it may have been that this had a special place within the layout. Again, that's the fabulous Rampart Scotland project that I'm really happy to be involved in up in, guess where, Scotland. We're looking at what these hill forts, or as I like to call them now, banked enclosures of unknown date. What are they and when did they date for? Did they have multiple occupation periods? Did they change the use over time? It's a very exciting time to be looking at this. A team led by Stanford University School of Medicine in California, USA, has recently carried out a study which suggests that some interbreeding amongst our prehistoric ancestors may have led to improvements in our immune system. Their studies were based on immune system class 1 gene known as HLA, which is a human leukocyte antigen, and a particular variant called HLA-B*73, which is found in modern humans. To understand the significance of their findings, we must first look at ancient migration patterns. Between 130 and 30,000 years ago, Eurasia was occupied by Neanderthals as well as a lesser-known species, the Denisovians, the first remains of which were only discovered in 2008 in Siberia. Analysis of their remains shows that they had the HLA immune gene in question. Then, approximately 65,000 years ago, the ancestors of modern Europeans migrated north out of Africa and into Eurasia. The gene was not present in the immigrants, as can be attested by analysis of the remains of those who stayed behind, so the only conclusion can be quickly drawn is that modern Europeans obtained their immune gene by interbreeding with the then native population of Neanderthals and Denisovians. In fact, Europeans have gained nearly 50% of their HLA genes from interbreeding. The data obtained is quite raw, and further research will need be needed before any definitive conclusions can be reached. An early sceptic of the findings is John Hawkes, assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's quoted as saying, "It's difficult to align ancient genes in this part of the genome. Also, we don't know what the value of these genes really was, although we can hypothesize that they are related to the disease environment in some way." So he's not too much of a skeptic there. Now, oh, this is going to make me hungry. Research into Homo erectus, the ancestor of our modern-day Homo sapiens, has shown that cooked food played a major part in our evolution, and in particular, our brain growth. Homo erectus walked the earth nearly 2 million years ago, and a recent study carried out by Harvard University has shown that by cooking food rather than eating it raw, daily eating time was reduced from 48% to approximately 4.7%. That's a massive drop. This not only provided them more potential time for thinking and inventing, but the very act of cooking made it easier to extract more calories from the food and more nutrition, thus fueling brain growth. The other big discernible physical attribute was a reduction in the size of teeth, as the food was now more tender and thus needed less raw power than ripping off a carcass or a plant and chewing and digesting it. Direct correlations can be drawn from other primates. The research by the Harvard team has been supported by David Strait, a paleoanthropologist from the University of Albany in New York, who is quoted as saying, "This is really compelling indirect evidence that human lineage became adapted to and dependent on cooking their food by the time that Homo erectus evolved." That's my next excuse next time I get caught munching far too much food. I'm just trying to increase my time for thinking. Now, Heritage Malta's Taxian temples are currently undergoing conservation as part of a massive project, including works on three sites, the Taxian temples themselves, Gigantia Archaeological Park, and St. Paul's Catacombs in Rabat. The Taxian Temples project envisages specialist studies including archaeological excavations, hydrological survey, 3D documentation and a limits of acceptable change study. Additionally, a new environmental monitoring system and a protective shelter for the structure's long-term protection from deterioration caused by the elements will be installed. The Taxian Temples will also see the installation of an extended walkway to improve accessibility and protect the temple's original surface from damage. A second elevated walkway will circle the temple structure itself. New information panels will enable visitors to see and understand better this World Heritage site. The works are expected to be completed by mid-September. I must admit, I went off to Malta and these temples are awesome. However, I am so glad they're going to get a much-needed upgrade. Oh, one thing, if I could ask for, is actually better signage to actually find some of them. I think I drove around Malta twice at one point. Now to Saudi Arabia, where Saudi officials say archaeologists have begun excavating a site that suggests horses were domesticated 9,000 years ago in the Arabian Peninsula, 4,000 years earlier than previously thought. The vice president of the Saudi Commission for Tourism and Antiquities said that the discovery at Al-Makar challenged the theory it first took place 5,500 years ago in Central Asia. Ali Al-Gaban said that it also changed what was known about the evolution of culture in the late Neolithic period in this area. The remains of this civilization were found close to Abha in southwestern Asir province, an area known to antiquity as Arabia Felix. The civilization, given the name Al-Makari, used methods of embalming that are also totally different to known processes. Among the remains found at the site are statues of animals such as goats, dogs, hawks, and a metre-tall bust of a horse. A statue of an animal of this dimension, dating back to this time, has never been found anywhere else in the world, he said. The remains were found in a valley that was once a riverbed at a time when the now arid Arabian Peninsula was more humid and fertile. An international team of archaeologists published an article in January that suggested human beings could have been present on the Arabian Peninsula around 125,000 years ago. A number of artefacts were also found, including arrowheads, scrapers, grain grinders and tools for spinning and weaving, as well as other tools that showed the inhabitants were very skilled at handicrafts. I wonder if they were selling them in little handicraft shops. Anyway, Mr. Gaban said that carbon-14 tests on the artefacts as well as some of the remains found there dates back to 7000 BCE. Although humans came into contact with horses around 50,000 years ago, they were only originally herded for meat and skins, and possibly milk. The first undisputed evidence of their domestication dates back to 2000-ish BCE, when horses were buried with chariots. By 1000 BCE, domestication spread throughout Europe, Asia, and North Africa. Now finally, an archaeological dig has got underway at Fortingall, near Aberfeldy, one of the earliest places of Christian worship in Perthshire, Scotland. The Breadalbane Heritage Society has joined forces with archaeologist Dr. Oliver O'Grady, best known for carrying out excavations at Scone Palace, to discover more about the village's ancient history. Dr. O'Grady is directing the excavations of two trenches and fields surrounding Fortingall, where the remains of the ancient Pictish monastery are believed to rest. Targets include a large ditch-like feature believed to have been surrounded the ancient parish kirk and famous Fortingall yew tree, which dates back to, believe it or not, 3000 BCE. Experts believe both landmarks sat at the heart of the site. The monastery is thought to be crucial to the region's history because Christianity and literacy first came into the area at such sites during the conversion of the Picts and ancient Celtic peoples of northern Scotland during the 7th century CE. Ooh, controversial. The disciples of St. Columba of Iona, such as St. Adman and St. Coiti, are still remembered in tradition and place names and may have actually founded the churches at Fortingall and nearby Dull. Both archaeologists and local volunteers will be at Fortingall until the end of this month and will be welcoming visitors and their questions. Well, that's it for this week. Now, don't forget that our news is also available on the iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. So have a look at www.stonepages.com/app. And of course, please do not be a stranger to Past Horizons, www.pasthorizons.com, where you'll get fabulous news and photographs as well as information about archaeological sites around the world that you, yes, you can get involved in, as well as all the tools you'll need to do it. Can I also remind people about my own humble little website of Badger, the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website, www.bajr.org. Remember, always, more can be found at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Well, thanks again for listening to this archaeology news. We hope you'll return again next week.